Good morning, everyone. I'd like to introduce Michiel Linaars. He's the Director of Strategy at NLNet Foundation, and he's going to be our first speaker of the day.
So I don't know how many people have been here, standing here, looking up to you and knowing that this is being streamed and this is the opening to 1,000 lectures in a day, but I can tell you it's a bit intimidating, even for old guys like me. Especially if their tooling doesn't comply. I'm using this nice new tool, a tool that we funded, but it's not playing nice. Which means that we will not do that as well. It's so nice that... I can try. So, I'm seeing stuff. It's just a lot faster than it's supposed to go. So anyway, let's talk. So I think all of you, and I don't think I even need slides. I think all of you look back at a long period in time where you're where you've been working for the public good. I think collectively we spent literally billions of hours doing things for the public good, and I think we can congratulate ourselves. We've done amazing. We've created a lot of infrastructure that the world now depends on. That said, that infrastructure is now out there, and it's being used, and it's not being used for good alone. It's being used by an insane amount of people to do all kinds of things, and even worse. The things that they're doing actually directly impact us. And there's a bittersweet irony in the fact that we're trying to empower people, but we empower machines. And we try to empower humans, and we empower the people that try to get those humans and control them. And so I've prepared this enormously lengthy slide deck, which you're not going to see. And not even I'm seeing it, so maybe I should just try and switch.
Because it would be depressing.
It would be very depressing not to do that. So let's try again.
Get another pair of hands. That's starting to look better. Okay, so we are again good. Now all we need to do is get back here.
So it's really killing me. Can I just use the mental notes? It's not playing nice. That sucks, but it's...
Maybe you keep talking and I try to get it playing.
Nah, that won't work. Hey, we see something. So, let's see if that works. Now, this is what you get when you do cutting-edge software. Okay, let's see if we can take it from here. We've made it in such a case that users can just take the technology that we create and not only use it as a consumption product, but actually can take control of their own destiny. And they can tweak it, they can prune it, they can recombine it, and if they choose, they can actually help to create a bigger thing. And we've created, I think, the biggest ecosystem in terms of technology on the planet. It's all connected. And so we've, on the top of this free and open source software, we've created a global cooperation, and a reuse that has spawned an enormous amount of economic activity, social activity. But how did we get here? When we look back on it, we started in a pretty naive or idealistic era. The wall had fallen. There was a political calm. The internet had been there in this place, but we just gotten the web. Now, man, this is so annoying. There's some folks here from CERN. I was at CERN last week. CERN is another kind of thing where we've created this idealistic situation where people from all over the world collaborate. And it's no coincidence that the web was born there, because it's in the DNA of such an organization. And it's this kind of thinking that of technologists that say we should do stuff for the world, we should collaborate, we should not have boundaries. This is often coined as capitalizing on peace dividend. We want to be fair. We want to be eager. We don't want any war anymore. So let's see if we can share. Now this confidence, this was permeating. The economies were booming. Everybody was in a good mood because money was being made all around, and parliamentary democracies seemed to be taking over. And we finally got into the end of time, and people actually considered it like that. It was philosophers like Fukuyama that said this is the end of history, this is the end point. We've now had all the ideological conflicts. We can globalize now. We can create this one world and start working on a common global cosmopolitan market. And of course the technology was also like booming at the time, and we were getting color screens, we were getting faster internet connections, and everybody was really in such a positive, constructive mood. And I think somebody on Hacker News last month, when somebody put up my tentative slide announcement, said this is reads like a eulogy of the original internet, and in a sense it is. We had a beautiful ideological naivete when we started collaborating, and everybody wanted to be part of this ecosystem, and we didn't see any enemies. We did choose some pretty dangerous allies. So we all think Linus Torvalds created Linux all by himself, but it was actually big tech companies that started adopting it that made the difference. It, when the cloud providers came along, they started investing heavily in the technologies that we use, and they're allies, but they're also different from us. They target platformization, and they want to have a proprietary service layer on top of that. So there's a bit of lock-in there, and we obviously thought that we could control that. That is not was not a realistic assumption. Now, of course, most people know that underneath all of that was a darker narrative, and the narrative came to light when whistleblowers like Edward Snowden revealed the fact that the U.S. knew all along that the internet was broken and insecure, and they were hacking our politicians like Merkel. They were breaking into pretty much every system that they had, doing mass surveillance. They got caught out as well because once people found out that we weren't playing fair, they started playing unfair as well. So somebody broke into their vault and released all their hacking tools to something called the shadow brokers. And I think from there on, people started to pay attention, even in the general audience. But most people just assumed that, well, you know, if we don't hear about it, as long as my computer turns on in the morning, as long as my code gets committed and it compiles, I'm not touched. I'm not affected. But this dependency that we created for ourselves on the cloud, on service or on commercial providers like GitHub, that we entrust with all our data, with all our authentication, and the fact that if we have a repo that we don't want to share with anybody, we do share it with them, and they share it with the U.S. government if they must. And this dark layer underneath it didn't get us so upset until we reached the point where we saw that political leadership in the U.S. was changing. And all of a sudden, it felt very uncomfortable that this was the case. So, and it is obvious we've been played well, I would say. If you look at the biggest IT company in the world losing out to a platform company, Microsoft bought a $25,000 operating system, MS-DOS. It was originally from a guy called Gary Kildall, and they took over the computer market because they owned the platform. If you own the platform, if the software is cannot easily place itself in other ecosystems, and so platforms rule, and evil platforms, they rule out competition. And obviously, there were people that noticed this. There were visionary people that knew that this was a problem, and they spent their life's work. I mean, they started in, some of them started in the 80s. They're now old people, and they want to empower users. They wanted this freedom to be created and to be retained. The free software movement, in particular, is actually named after this whole freedom. And a lot of people took that for hyperbole. A lot of people took it for granted. But and obviously people flock to the cloud, and it's and understandably so. There were many red flags, but it's oh so convenient. And also, we thought we felt equal. We didn't feel as if we were at a disadvantage. We thought these are our friends. It's so much effort to do all these things. It's so boring to buy a machine, configure it, and then it breaks on a Sunday night, and you have to fix it. And it's god-awful to do that. And so what if nice people offer to take all of that off of our hands? And we felt, even the company names, I mean, we see some company names as sponsors here. They were household names. They felt as friends and as people that we could trust. And so we were told, focus on your core business, do look at the total cost of ownership. it's almost like if sending your kids to a monastery in the 50s in Canada, saying we'll take care of your kids, it's a very dangerous proposition. Taking care of people, taking care of all the hard bits, makes you incompetent and makes you a victim of potential abuse. And of course, in the short term, you don't know, you don't feel this. It's the pain comes long, long afterwards. If you've ceded your autonomy, if you've ceded your sovereignty, you got your hands free. You can party. You can get a career. You can make maybe a little buck of money. But if we look at it, if all of Europe did that, and it did, then we collectively now draw the short end of the always draw the short straw out of the hat, because at the macroeconomic level we don't have capacity. We are literally incompetent in surviving. And CTOs were even proud of this. CTOs mentioned the word, they have a cloud-first strategy, and that, I mean, I find that an obscene term. It's a well-chosen frame. The marketeers that at the cloud companies that came up with this term did well in making it palatable, but it is obviously not something where users still have any say in things. So my proposal to name it is strategic computer rental and anchoring to proprietary services, because that is what you're doing. You're strategically renting somebody else's stuff, and then you're using their proprietary services on top. And obviously that's an acronym. If you take that strategy, then you end up with what you bargained for, and that is scraps. It's literally, you end up with the breadcrumbs from the other people. It's where you make the money, is the breadcrumbs of the other people. You're allowed on their machines, but they can kick you off and at any point in time. And when there's any margin, they can just replicate it, because you've shown them how it works. And that is competitive disadvantage that Europe is now bleeding for. And we notice now it's even worse than that. Even the scraps are not guaranteed. We can just wait for the moment, and we've seen it already, where the International Court of Justice was threatened by the American president, and their services were taken off. So we're not even allowed to run this minimal service that we need to exist, to email, to write documents. And so we're now at the mercy of the same people that exploited us. And if we look at their bank accounts, I think we can agree that if you're a hecto billionaire, you've done pretty well. And they still hold the kill switch. So, nah. Fosses obviously offers a really, really elegant way out. It always has, and probably always will, because that's the nature of it. You give the whole recipe, you're allowing people to build everything that they need to do. So there's a big task and there's a big opportunity. And this big opportunity is that society is now looking at us to handle things, keep society afloat, because I think by now everybody's in a panic mode. All of a sudden now we see hear government saying, well, we shouldn't have become so dependent, but that's about 3 decades too late. And at the same time, weirdly enough, there's still inside governments many people that are running exactly towards the fire, keep pushing in the wrong direction. And of course, the big driver there is AI, but that makes us indefensible in a very literal sense. I mean, there's just no way that we can defend people that that go that route. And there's an example, for instance, in the Netherlands, the most critical ministry, I would say, is the Ministry of Finance. And the Ministry of Finance has for the last couple of years been working on migrating everything to Microsoft 365. And so they were told by Parliament, please don't do that. That's a huge liability. They've seen Trump. They've seen the whole situation. And yet they say, well, we've put so much effort into this. And oh, by the way, we get a lot of productivity loss because we are using an old software from the same developer because they're a long-term Microsoft customer. So they have alternatives. The Germans and the French are actually have produced a tool suite that they can use. They're working with them, but this particular ministry thinks that it doesn't need it. There's a sort of weird thing that if you're locked in by the same company for 50 years, close to 50 years, since the 80s, and you're still going with, and despite all the threats, besides all the warnings, you're going there, it must be sort of a Stockholm syndrome where you're kind of in love with your capturer. And now, I must admit that I do agree that they have a problem with their current tools, because 3 months ago I filed a request, a Freedom of Information request. They have not been able to produce a single document in 3 months. And they're supposed to do this within 6 weeks, and yet they're unable with thousands of employees to produce a single document backing up the claims that they made to Parliament about how much productivity loss that the current Microsoft solution has given them. So now, I'm not saying that we need to strip all these people from responsibility and put them into a corner, make them wear a pointy hat, but it would be nice if they would be slightly more aware of how enormously delicate the situation currently is, and they would stop pushing people towards the wrong path. Because if they don't take these steps, if they don't lead by example, then who else will follow this? And every SME in the country, every other smaller city or municipality will just say, you know, if the big guys don't do it, well, why should we? Now, another direction that we see, and this is